This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 144.
Hello and welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast, where it's all about empowering you to run a marathon and change your life. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we cover issues faced by slower runners, tales from the back of the pack. And in the quick tip segment, Angie will give you a list of marathons that have generous cutoff times. And to get our help in your training for a marathon or half marathon, find out how to become an official Academy member and train with us and our awesome online community by visiting marathontrainacademy.com. So Angie, what's going on since the last time we recorded? You signed up for another marathon.
And you signed up for another marathon.
Yeah, that's right. So let's talk about that. You first.
I am signed up for the Leadville Trail Marathon on June 20th in Colorado.
Awesome.
So yeah, I picked the easiest one I could find.
So this will be your first Colorado marathon.
That's right.
And we're actually going out west on kind of an extended vacation. Going to eventually end up in Washington State to see my family, but we're also going to go through Montana to see your family.
Well, my grandmother died this last week, so we had to kind of move our trip up a little bit. So we'll be out there for the funeral and to connect with family, and then heading down to Colorado for the race and onward and forward.
So tell us about the Leadville Trail Marathon. This is not to be confused with the Leadville Trail 100-miler.
Thankfully, I'm not doing the 100-miler. Yeah.
Which is later in the summer. It's run by the same company. But this is a marathon, but it's still up at elevation.
Yes, it starts at 10,000 feet, which is where Leadville, Colorado is. I believe it's the highest incorporated town in the U.S. And then it climbs to over 13,000 feet. I think there's maybe 6,000 feet of climbing involved.
Wow.
So, yeah, my sea level lungs are quavering in my chest.
Yeah, I think we live at like 300 feet above sea level. So I was about to ask, how's your elevation training going?
Well, considering that I really only have about less than 2 weeks now, and I signed up for it a week ago, it's definitely going to be one of those cobbled together training programs. I have been wearing my full hydration pack and doing treadmill hill repeats, but I doubt it's going to help that much. So
this is going to be interesting, folks.
I'm sure I'll be walking a lot, and it will probably be my slowest marathon to date, but I will be happy to finish on my own 2 feet within the cutoff time. So there are my high aspirations.
Speaking of your own 2 feet, this is a trail marathon, and you're not the most coordinated person.
Let's not bring that up now.
I just don't want you to fall.
Don't put any doubts in my head.
I won't.
I'm going to rock this thing.
That's right.
The rocks are not going to get me.
Only positive thoughts.
That's right.
Everyone send positive thoughts Angie's way right now. And I'm going to need them too, because I signed up for the Tupelo Marathon in Tupelo, Mississippi on September the 6th. We've run this before a couple years ago. It's hot and hard, but we had a good time, and I just love the attitude that this race has.
What he really loves is the shirt.
The shirt, the t-shirt. That's
and the medal.
That. That's right.
Skull and crossbones.
Yeah. The medal says, trample the weak, hurdle the dead. And the shirts are tie-dye, so.
Really, you're just all about the bling.
But it's only 4 hours away from where we live, and I really need to get back up to marathon level in my running.
And this will be your 10th marathon, right?
Yeah, that's right. 10th marathon, so hit that nice round number.
And then retire?
No, because then I'm doing, later this year, I'm also doing the Marine Corps Marathon.
Right.
So I'll get at least 11 in this year. But I just feel like I've been lethargic this spring and summer, and I haven't been dedicated enough in exercising and running, training. I've done a half marathon, but that's about it. So I need to, I just need something crazy and scary to wake me up out of my lethargy.
We've kind of been talking about that this week. I'm thinking about doing a podcast on how to overcome motivational slumps.
Yeah.
And one of those ways can be to sign up for something that's challenging or maybe a little bit scary.
Well, in this episode, we're going to talk about back of the pack runners, something that we haven't discussed, you know, in detail on the podcast yet. Though a lot of you that listen would identify yourself as a slower runner or back of the pack. And even if you're not back of the pack, maybe you're middle of the pack or you're pretty fast and you can win your age group and you're running Boston qualifying times. I think this will still be interesting because you'll see what some of your fellow runners go through, some of their fears and challenges that they face. Plus, I hope you'll pick up some good tips on things like how to get faster and good training tips. Right, Angie? I don't know. All that's going to be in there, right? I don't know. You've got it all planned.
I'm just along for the ride.
You're the brains behind it, Angie.
Oh, okay. Great.
And the good looks. So before we get into that, we want to say congrats to some people who are running races of their own this summer. So, Angie, what's going on in MTA land?
Just like to say congrats to Academy member Sharon, who ran a half marathon PR at the Hospital Hill Half in Kansas City. So that was very exciting for her. Then I had a coaching client, Henry, who ran a trail half marathon at night. Had the combination of darkness and trails, and he was saying the course had a lot of roots, and some places it was single track. But he managed to stay on his feet for the most part, and he finished 37th overall. So that was really a great accomplishment for his first night trail race.
That's a unique combination there. Trail race at night. You know, maybe you can add in a couple more things, like doing it in a very dangerous place, like with lots of bears. Like maybe call it the Murderous Bear Mountain Marathon. I'll sign you up for that marathon, Angie.
We also got a nice note from Kelly in the Academy. She says, I'm proud to say I ran my first marathon last Sunday in South Australia and have to say a massive thank you to Angie for your fantastic training plan. And also thank you for the highly entertaining and informative podcast to get us through the low points and remind us why we signed up in the first place. It was 16 weeks, 593 kilometers worth of training runs, and 4 hours and 49 minutes later, we crossed the 42.2 kilometer marker and can now proudly call ourselves marathoners.
Congrats, Kelly, on running your first marathon. It's exciting. She makes a good point there that sometimes you just got to remember why you're doing this. Why did you sign up in the first place? Because your training is going to get hard. So establishing that, like, right at the beginning, why am I doing this? Why is it important?
Exactly.
That's key. We actually have a whole course on mindset in the Academy that helps a person work through that.
This note comes from Natalie. She says, Hi, Angie. I just wanted to thank you and Trevor for all you've done for the running community. I went from not working out to running my first marathon over a year ago, all because of your podcast. I took a significant amount of time off and decided to use your training plan to train for my second marathon, the Marine Corps Marathon. And that comes from Natalie. And hopefully we'll get to meet her there.
Yeah. Well, that's cool to hear that she went from not working out to her first marathon. So a big change, I'm sure, took place in her life. And I can identify with that, too, because I went from not working out to sometimes working out now. No, but that's why I signed up for Tupelo, because I'm tired of living in Angie's shadow.
Whatever. And this last email says, I just wanted to email you and say thanks for helping me run my first marathon. I found your podcast a great help and encouragement to keep training, especially after suffering multiple injuries in the 18 weeks of training. I ran the Belfast Marathon in Northern Ireland, and although it's fair to say it didn't go as planned, I really enjoyed it, and it won't be my last. The plan was sub 4 hours, but I came in just under 4 hours and 20 minutes. I know this is still a good achievement, but when you aim for a goal and come up short, it's hard to view it as anything but a failure. There are some things that went against me on the day, some of them my own making, and I also really struggled with injury and training. I was a non-runner in January, and 3 runs into my training got shin splints, then developed plantar fasciitis, which one of your episodes helped me identify. I have to say I probably underestimated just what a big challenge the marathon is, and maybe overestimated my ability, but it was still a great experience, and the lessons I've learned in training and in self-discipline will stay with me. I've also been able to identify imbalances in my body, which are highlighted when I run, and can now go about correcting, which will help improve my day-to-day life. So I've been encouraging everyone who will listen to start running and listen to your podcast. I remember hearing your tagline, run a marathon and change your life, and thinking it was a bit much, but I can testify to it being true. And that comes from Andy in Ireland.
Wow, Andy, that is awesome. And there's a lot in what he just said. I mean, we should kind of unpack some of that, because he says he went from being a non-runner in January to running his first marathon and then suffering some injuries. That's usually faster than somebody would typically train for their first marathon, isn't it?
Right, which is, you know, probably one of the reasons that he suffered with so many injuries, mm-hmm. and things didn't go according to plan exactly because of not coming in with a strong running base.
Right.
It is easy to think, oh, you know, lots of people run marathons and I can just jump into it and do it myself. And the fact is, you know, he was able to hang in there and with some training modifications,
yeah.
be able to finish. You know, but still, I'm sure he's thinking about next time he trains that it'll be different. Like he said, addressing some imbalances in his body and having a stronger foundation going into the next one, he'll really have a much better experience.
But typically when people come to us, for training, we recommend building up a running base of like 6 to 12 months before you start your marathon training plan.
Yeah, it depends on your fitness level going in, but yes, definitely having a solid running base is important.
I would say that Andy's got to be a really tough guy to be able to run a marathon in, you know, 6 months from a non-runner to marathon and to fight through those injuries. Thanks again, Andy, for writing us, and congrats on running the Belfast Marathon. Okay, well, this episode's all about slower runners, and Angie, you've cleverly titled this part Tales from the Back of the Pack.
That's right.
So how did this episode come about?
Well, I had been thinking about doing a podcast addressing slower runners because, you know, a lot of the stuff out there is keyed to faster runners or getting faster, and really sometimes don't address issues that slower runners have. And we work with a lot of slower runners in the academy. I have coaching clients who are slower runners. And so some of the things that they deal with are somewhat unique. And so I posted about this on Facebook and just got really an overwhelming response. People chiming in, sharing, you know, that they were slower runners or some of the pros and cons that come with being a slower runner. So I thought, you know, this is probably going to make a really good podcast. And it was very educational for me as well. Some of the things that I'd never thought about before. So thank you to everyone who took the time to share your perspective on this topic. It was really helpful. So the big question to deal with first is what actually is slow? And this is very subjective based on your perspective. For an elite runner, anyone who doesn't place in a race could be actually considered slow. And there's that whole mentality of there's only one winner and the second place person is the first place loser, you know, kind of that very competitive mentality.
And then you have your non-running friends that say, did you win the marathon?
Right, exactly.
No.
But for maybe a 7-hour marathoner, a 5-hour marathoner is going to seem fast. So there really aren't any clear-cut boundaries. And this note comes from Lucy. She says, I'm not sure exactly what pace defines a slow runner. I read an article last year that defined a slow runner to be someone running slower than 8 minutes per mile pace. In that case, I'm a slow runner. I think it's all subjective. I consider myself mid-pack, with plenty of runners in front of me and plenty behind me. But it doesn't matter since we're all running the same distance towards the finish line with similar goals.
Yeah, I think it all depends on if you look at the race results at the end of the marathon, and you can easily see how you ranked. Like for myself, I usually, you know, consistently rank right in the middle. So I would be a mid-packer. You know, I can run like between a four-hour and 4.5-hour marathon. At the Marine Corps Marathon, I ran over 5 hours. I think it was like 5.5. I felt like I was at the back of the pack. And some of you might remember that race recap. I had a pretty nasty ankle sprain 6 days before the marathon. And I just really took it easy, walked whenever I felt pain, but I was at the back of the pack. The people back there, there was a lot of anxiety about whether or not they were going to make the cutoff, because at the Marine Corps Marathon, you got to make it to the bridge. And then on some of the out and back sections, I could actually see the cleanup crews in the sag wagon. I'm like, yep, I'm at the back of the pack.
So yeah, if you look at it from a numbers perspective, then maybe the top 30% of the finishers in the race could be considered more toward the front. You know, maybe the middle 30 to 40% could be mid-packers, and then the last 30% could be considered back of the pack. Of course, it depends on what race you do. Some tend to attract faster runners, and some attract slower runners. For example, a 7-hour marathoner who's in her 30s would be considered slower, while Harriet Thompson, who just set a record as being the world's oldest female marathoner at age 92, she finished in 7.5 hours at the San Diego Marathon, and that's considered, you know, amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So it just all depends on a lot of factors. In the responses that we received from people who perceive themselves as being slow, there was also a wide range of paces that were mentioned, anywhere from a 9-minute mile or like a 5:35 per kilometer to 15-minute per mile or like a 9:19 per kilometer. So there was just a wide variety of people who thought they were slower runners. I've seen articles about running before that basically said if you couldn't run faster than a 7-minute mile, then you were a jogger or shouldn't even be running. And obviously that's crap. We're not going to even consider that because there's so much variety in the running community. And I don't think that's the attitude the majority of runners have. But there's also the assumption that every runner wants to improve their time and get faster. And that's interestingly not also the case. Many runners are perfectly content with their pace and they simply run and do races to enjoy the challenge or for social factors. Lena says, I'm a slow runner. My goal in races is to finish the race within the cutoff time, and everything else is a bonus. It might seem a low bar, but strangely, running a personal best is not necessarily a motivator for me. Running with friends, enjoying the race, and feeling healthy enough to finish the race are more than enough. I know I'll never be a professional runner, so why stress about my time? It actually stresses me out more when people want to compare times with me.
You know, it highlights the fact that there's different motivations people have for running marathons.
Exactly. Megan says, I'm a back of the packer and I think it works for me. I did one season of track in high school and I hated the pressure of running with people that were almost all way faster than me. Once I started doing it myself, though, a world of options opened up. I could run to get somewhere, to do an errand or explore. I could run a long way if I practiced or run over lots of obstacles. I could run with a sense of competition against myself and try to improve on speed or time. Essentially, I feel like I have a lot of choices about where my priorities lie each time I do a run or a race. If I were faster or better at it, I think I would feel a constant pressure to do well, and it would be more stressful and less enjoyable for me. And I think this has a lot to do with my personality. For other people, I think the competition is very satisfying. However, the negatives of being a slower runner is the extra time is the biggest downer. My longest long runs take 4 hours, and my marathons take 5. I'm rotten at managing my time, so this has caused issues at home in the past, and it tends to kill motivation. The impact hurts pretty bad after 5 hours, and it would certainly be nice to get off my feet sooner. But the positives are there. Being at the back of the pack makes for more interesting people watching. You have and overhear some very interesting conversations and see a lot of personality in people's running styles. The costumes tend to be better back there, too.
The parties happen at the back of the pack, man.
That's right.
They're like tossing beach balls in the air and, you know, popping corks and stuff. And
Jello shots. So, yeah, we're going to talk about some of the challenges and issues that are faced by slower runners. And these may not apply to every slower runner, so I don't want to make blanket generalizations, but some of these things did come up frequently in the responses that I got. And I also want to point out that we may go through different phases during your lifetime of running. There may be a variety of different reasons why you get slower or faster, and it's not like once you're a certain speed that you're always going to be that same speed. And I've gone through times in my life when I've definitely run slower, sometimes on purpose, like I was when I was doing heart rate training. Other times when coming back from pregnancy, running in the heat and humidity definitely slows me down a lot. At elevation, probably be in turtle mode there too. Or simply there are times when I don't feel motivated to run faster. So there's definitely good reasons to run slower. And you're not stuck necessarily in that characterization the rest of your life if you don't want to be either.
Okay, so we're going to look at about 13 different issues that slower runners face. And the first one is the desire to get faster.
Yes, as it turns out, the majority of runners do want to get faster and see improvements in their time. And that's why every running magazine and website has multiple articles devoted on how to get faster or speed work, mental strategies, things like that. And we've talked about how to get faster on the podcast before as well. One common thing that holds back some runners from getting faster is poor running form. And there may be certain weaknesses and imbalances in the body that prevent you from getting faster as quickly. I've noticed that the majority of slower runners often have a lower cadence or your foot turnover or your strides when you run. Trisha says, my average long run pace is 12:30 minute per mile until this spring. Within the last 3 months, I've moved up to a 10:30 to 11 minute pace. My challenge has always been breathing. My legs can do it, but I hyperventilate. Now my issue is leg turnover. So a lot of people mention that, you know, when they run, their cadence may be only in the 140s or 150s, whereas around 180 is more ideal. And this is one of these things that I track and work on with my coaching clients. I'll often have them measure their cadence over a series of runs just so we can see where we're at and start working on improving that. Taking short, quick steps will improve your running efficiency and reduce the risk of injuries that can be caused by overstriding. So one great way to work on increasing cadence is by using a metronome app. And so you set the app to the desired beat per minute, which 180 per minute is ideal. And then you try to match your steps to the beat. And it can be very helpful to try this by running in place at first. So I tell some of my coaching clients to run in place for a minute at 180 cadence before they even start running. It kind of gives you a feel for what it's like to run at a higher cadence.
And if you don't have a metronome app, you can always go to YouTube and there's metronome videos people have put together at various beats per minute, and you can find a 180 video and just stream that.
So if you find that your initial cadence is, you know, 140, 150, 160, you won't get to 180 per minute right away. You know, kind of work on incrementally improving your cadence. You know, get up 10 beats, and once you get to there, then work up to faster And, you know, eventually you'll find that your running form, your running efficiency has improved a lot, and that will help make you faster. Maybe you can play a little 180 clip here.
Should I play 180 right now?
Yeah.
Let's do it. Okay. So. The second issue that slower runners face is carrying extra weight.
Right. One possible reason why a person may struggle to get faster is because they're carrying extra weight. The more we weigh, the more the forces of gravity hold us back, and the more energy we'll expend while we're running. Some studies have estimated that even 5 extra pounds of body weight can reduce our running performance by 5%. And that's why elite runners watch their weight very carefully. I remember before the Boston Marathon, we were at a session with Meb Kifleski, and he was talking about how he was right at his racing weight before the Boston Marathon. And I think it was a whopping 121 pounds. I instantly sunk in depression after hearing that. But the fact is that if you can reduce your body fat to normal levels, then it's going to improve your running to a certain extent. Extra weight also makes annoyances like chafing more common, and it can be difficult to find running clothes, particularly sports bras, that fit well. But we all know that talking about losing weight is much easier than actually making it happen. So it's one of those processes that you have to figure out a sustainable way to reduce your body fat and overall live the healthiest lifestyle that you can.
And we do talk about weight loss in the Academy for those that are members. And we also have a program called the Fat Adapted Eating Plan that you can find on our website. And the third issue faced by slow runners is training takes more time.
Right. As a slower runner, you're going to be on your feet for longer, and you may run the risk of overuse injuries if you're not careful in your training. And also, it just takes more time out of your life. That's one reason why I think it's really important to include focused, low-impact cross-training into your schedule. Things like swimming, cycling, rowing, yoga, Pilates, strength training, and core training work neglected muscles, and they can contribute to making you fitter and less injury-prone. Sharon says, at 63 years old and about 30 pounds overweight, my average easy run pace is around 15 minutes per mile. For shorter distances, I can hold steady around 14 minutes. My fastest pace is around 12:30, but it can only be sustained for a mile or so. One of the biggest challenges is being out there for hours longer than faster runners, which can add to overuse injuries. And most recently, having to stress over whether I'd be able to finish before the cutoff time brought a lot of added stress, possibly even contributing to the GI stress that ultimately kept me from getting to my goal of finishing the marathon. Also, I joined a local running group last year, but no one runs my pace, so I still end up running alone. Don't get me wrong, I get great pleasure out of running every day, but I was just keeping it real for your podcast, which I so look forward to. I'm interested to see if I'm the slowest one out there.
So what do you think, Angie? Is she the slowest one out there?
Well, I would say there's many people who do long runs at a 15-minute per mile pace.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We've heard from lots of runners. Our friend Ed from Hawaii, who has run a marathon in every state, and now I think he's looking at doing all the Canadian provinces. He sometimes runs at that pace, right?
Yes, he finishes marathons more in the back of the pack and has a great time doing it.
Yeah, loves it. It's really made a lifestyle out of it.
That's right. Really changed his health and fitness for the better.
Yeah. So that's a good point, that even if you're running a 15-minute mile, you're still doing something positive for your health. And granted, like Sharon said, you got to be careful because you don't want to stress your body and your muscles and there's overuse injuries. But if you're smart about it, you know, even being a slower runner will have big payoffs.
Exactly.
So number four is fueling needs may be different for back-of-the-pack runners.
That's right. When you're running for multiple hours, this may require some adjustments in your fueling routine. And Jenny says she loves this idea of doing a podcast on being a slower runner. She asked the question, do you fuel based on distance or time spent running? And so this is a good question.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like my fueling strategy for 26 miles is going to be the same as someone who's going to be out there for maybe 6 hours or longer.
Right.
You know, it's going to vary. And so you'll want to fuel for the time that you're out there, not the distance. So, for example, if you'll be doing a 3-hour training run, you'll want to fuel at regular intervals with enough calories to keep you feeling strong, but not too many calories as that can cause GI issues. And simple sugar products can sometimes not be as effective for longer time frames because of the quick release of sugars. For example, using multiple gels can often cause the GI tract to get overwhelmed and it can result in bloating, gas, nausea, and diarrhea. So you'll want to be careful about finding a fueling strategy that works for you. There are some fuels out there that are easier on the stomach, that are better maybe for the marathon distance and ultra distance. And so, yeah, you may want to check at what ultramarathoners are doing and use a similar strategy since you'll be out there for a longer amount of time.
It's true. And by the way, if you didn't pick up on GI, which when we first started the podcast, I never even heard of the term, but gastrointestinal.
Yes, that can, the whole range of bloating, gas, nausea, diarrhea, the whole nine yards.
Well, the fifth consideration is pacing strategies.
As a slower runner, you're going to want to develop a pacing strategy that works for you as you'll be on your feet longer, like we've talked about a little bit earlier. And this may include using run-walk intervals to conserve your energy over time. Edith says, this is a great topic. Many of the ladies that I'm coaching are slow runners, and some beat themselves up over that and seem to struggle with seeing the value of being a slow runner. As if you're more of a runner if you're a fast runner than a slow runner. I'm working with them to seek the feel-good feeling in running, tapping into the sensation of mastery, and to let go of the guilt that I'm not good enough. Although all of them are now able to run 8 to 10K distances without stopping, and some of them even did their first half marathon a few weeks ago, I'm considering taking some of them back to the run-walk stage and looking at more of a Galloway method, as I think this may be beneficial for their long-term fitness. I think their ability to drive themselves, and also from an injury prevention point of view, the Galloway philosophy is great, and it also opens up becoming a faster runner. And she says, looking forward to your podcast about this. And we did interview Jeff Galloway a few weeks ago on the podcast, and he talked about his run, walk, run method. So, you know, if this is something that you've been thinking about or never even heard of before, you might want to go back and listen to that podcast and also check out his website and some of his books about how to figure out the right run, walk, run strategy for you.
And number six, another issue is elitist attitudes that other runners can have.
Unfortunately, there are always some people who promote the idea that you're only a real runner if you're fast. And we've talked about how this rubbish can come from some running publications and faster runners. But I really think this is the exception and not the norm. Most runners of all speeds are very encouraging and supportive. And so if you run into one of the bad apples, don't let their negativity affect you. I realize they obviously have other issues that are causing these bad attitudes toward you, and it's probably not about you at all. Anne wrote and said, I love that you plan to do a podcast on this topic. Several years ago, there was an article in my local newspaper about how marathons needed to be more elite, and only those runners who could post at least 3 to 3.5 hour times should be able to run them. This elitist mentality made me see red. I have so much respect for all runners, but particularly for those who aren't naturally fast, but persevere for 5, 6, 7+ hours on the course. All marathoners show grit and determination, but I argue that this group shows it even more so.
Well, that would exclude me from running marathons.
Me too.
3.5 hour times.
They'd get me on the sag wagon with that one.
You've done a 3.5 hour marathon, Angie.
Well, 3:35, so I would be at the back of the pack for that marathon. And there are some marathons. I think Osaka, Japan has one that you have to run maybe sub-3:30, sub-3:20.
To even get in?
To even get in. So, yeah, there's a few marathons out there that are really, really for more elite runners.
Yeah. But that's the cool thing about marathons is that they really democratized the sport of running so that anybody can participate and everyone's a winner. As long as they finish.
Exactly.
And everyone has all the same miles to run and the huge challenge of doing it, carrying your own body and your own power over the finish line. So the ground is level at the finish line.
Hopefully.
Except for the podium.
At the Marine Corps Marathon, I think the last few meters you have to go uphill. It eventually levels out, though.
So another issue slow runners face is time comparisons. Angie, explain what that means.
Well, since running is a very numbers-oriented sport, it's hard not to fall into that trap of comparing ourselves to others. And I think we've all done that at some point. When I look at the times from elite and sub-elite athletes, it's easy for me to feel very slow. I'll most likely never break the 3-hour barrier in the marathon. Actually, I'd be ecstatic if I could break 3:30. But this can lead to that compare and despair mentality. And
well, I like that, compare and despair.
Yeah. And Liz wrote in and talked about this. She says, I tend to struggle with placement at the beginning of a race, especially if there aren't any pace groups. I'm always nervous about placing myself too far up in the pack because I don't want to get in anyone's way. But if I place myself too far back, I do a lot of weaving. a lot of faster runner friends encourage me to run a tangent, but it's really hard to run in a straight line when you're trying to get out of the way or weaving around other people. I feel a lot less stressed out in the back of the pack, especially if I'm not running for time. I have a lot of fun encouraging people around me and listening to some crazy stories from my pace group. One of my fondest memories at the back of the pack was my first marathon. I was coming into the home stretch running solo, and all the faster runners that had already finished helped clear a path for me by keeping spectators out of the way and making sure I stayed out of traffic. That was pretty awesome, and it made me proud to be a runner. When I see my other runner friends placing in their age groups every weekend, it's hard for me not to feel slow. But another runner friend reminded me of the compare and despair thing. So that's really a great point that, you know, you can be back there enjoying yourself, having a great race, and then afterwards, you know, someone can be like, you know, what was your finishing time? You know, or did you place in your age group?
Yeah, or it's hard to see all these people who have their medal on already because they've already finished. They're drinking a beer or something, you know, you're still out there.
Right. And sometimes people face discouragement. Maybe someone who's older than them passes them. Or for maybe for a guy, you know, older woman passes, you know, you get chicked or something. Or, you know, I've been passed by plenty of grandparents before. Mm-hmm. And that's awesome. I mean, I just really think it's amazing. It doesn't really hurt my self-esteem. Because I think, I hope I am still out here kicking other younger people's butts when I'm older. It's wonderful to want to compete with yourself and improve, and that's very natural. However, you know, if you find that this competition takes the joy out of running and it's causing a lot of stress, it may be time to take a step back. If you find yourself not happy with the way a race went because you missed an age group placing or you don't PR every time, then you're placing too much pressure on yourself. It may be time to run technology free for a while or not dig into the race stats quite so deeply. Just accept what your time was and not worry about how you placed. Whatever you do, don't base your value as a runner on your speed or your placing in a race. Every runner has worth and should be valued in the running community, like many of the people who've written in have said.
And issue number 8 is discouragement with getting slower as you get older.
Yes, we did a podcast a while back on issues faced with older runners or aging. And one fact of getting older is that you will eventually get slower. Now, there is a period of years when you'll get faster no matter what age you start training. There's kind of this period of improvement. So if you start running at age 60, you know, you can improve for a number of years and set PRs, but eventually, you know, your body is going to start slowing down again. Even though age is just a number, I've accepted that someday sub-4-hour marathons are not going to be realistic for me, you know, and hopefully not for many years. But you kind of have to think about why you run. Is it only to get faster, or do you find other payoff factors in running? If you notice that your pace eventually doesn't improve despite a lot of effort, it may be time to focus on other benefits that come with running, such as friendship or traveling to races, staving off illness that comes from inactivity, maybe things like having more energy and the emotional and mental boost that results from running. This note comes from Herb. He says, "Not only am I slow, but I'm slow for an old person." He's 69. "My goal when I started MTA was a 12-minute mile, and I have achieved that, and my PR for a half is about 11:45 minute per mile. But of course, now I want to get faster. My last half, I dropped back to 12 minutes per mile. I try a number of strategies, such as monitoring my heart rate, run, walk, run, and running continuously. I would like to break the 11-minute per mile barrier and qualify for Boston."
Well, that's cool. That's neat to have that perspective.
Yes, exactly. And you don't have to give up on the desire to improve just because you may be getting older. And you may have come to running later in life and you think, man, I wish I'd started this when I was younger. There are still great things in store. You can always become a better version of yourself. And I think with age and experience can come mental toughness and maybe a greater appreciation of the ability to run at all, something that younger people can take for granted.
And issue number 9 that slow runners face is a lack of running and training partners.
I think Sharon alluded to this earlier in her note that, you know, she had joined a running group and there was still no one who ran her pace, so she ended up running alone. And there are some running groups and clubs that are often geared toward faster runners, and you may feel left behind during track workouts or on group runs. So, you know, not every running club is for everyone. There are ones that are really competitive and may not be a good fit. But there are other ones that do cater to slower runners, things like team and training, which often help people train for their first marathon and have a lot of slower runners among their ranks, or Disney run groups. They often, you know, have a lot of slower runners too. Or you can even connect with other runners that are more your pace online and kind of encourage each other virtually. But I think one great thing about being slower is that you often make better connections with other runners during races. Maybe there's more time to get to know each other and talk. And there will most likely be someone going your pace during the race, so you really won't be alone.
Yeah, you can do all kinds of stuff, you know, at the back of the pack, like scrapbooking cards.
Yeah, I think one kind of a cool thing about the group Marathon Maniacs I'm a part of is that a lot of them don't really care about their marathon times. It's more of a social aspect to their running. And, you know, they'll post pictures like, found a Dairy Queen at mile 25. And, you know, they're like eating a Blizzard for the last mile. And it's all about having fun and social aspect of it and hitting up every alcohol stop there is along the way or whatever that floats their boat.
Oh, man. Issue number 10 is stressing out about cutoff times in races.
That's right. And Erica writes in, she says, this is a silly little detail that bothered me at the Pittsburgh Marathon. Based on my expected finish time, I was put into the last corral. It took me 29 minutes to cross the starting line. Not being able to finish a race during the cutoff time is a real fear for slower runners. Often a race will have a cutoff time, which is then shortened because it takes time for the last corral to actually cross the start line.
That happened at the Lincoln Marathon.
That's right. I think they had a 6 hour and 30 minute cutoff time, but it took 30 minutes for the last corral to cross the starting line. Mm-hmm. So that essentially gives you, 6 hours before they start shutting down the course and everything.
It was different at the Marine Corps Marathon because it went by the timing chip, the chip time of the last guy to cross the starting line.
Right. So they didn't start the cutoff until that point. Yeah, I think that's a really good way to do it. But, sometimes the course has roads that can only be closed for so long. And then if you're out on the course longer, they don't have traffic control and you have to move to the sidewalks. Some races have been known to start taking down the finish line before the advertised cutoff time, which is definitely not cool. And I've had many runners report that they fear getting swept up in the sag wagon. So one nice thing about being able to look up details online is that it's pretty easy to find out a cutoff time for a race. And you can usually read reviews in places like Marathon Guide from other runners to see how the race actually handles slower runners. If they say that, the aid stations were all dry, this is like a maybe, 6 hours into the race, the aid stations were all dry at mile 20 and they were threatening to pull me off the course or they shut the finish line down early. You can kind of find out these things pretty easily nowadays. So it can help you in choosing which races to do. There's also forums like the Marathon Maniacs or the 50 State group where you can get feedback about how the race treats slower runners. There are some marathons that actually offer an early start option if you project that your finish time is over 6 hours. So you can actually, get a head start, essentially, and not feel so pressured that you'll be pulled off the course. And in our quick tip today, like we talked about earlier, we'll give a list of races that are best for slower runners or walkers because they have a generous cutoff time.
And issue number 11 is the fear of being last.
Yes. And Mary Lee writes in, she says, my positive about being slow is not how many finish in front of me, but that I did finish. And an added plus is how many people are behind me. If no one's behind me, then I was just cleaning up the pack and making sure no one was left behind. When I first started walking, everyone laughed and said, you are too old. She is 63 years old. I will show them. My first 5K was in February in 25 degree weather, and my pace was 14:40 minutes per mile, and 750 finished behind me. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Yeah. She recently finished her first half marathon, and she walked it, and then she recently did a 5-mile race and took first in her age group.
Way to go, Mary Lee.
Awesome. That's really awesome. The potential of being last can be a scary thing. I can definitely relate to that, thinking, well, if I was going to be the last one out there, that would be all this attention would be on me. I would feel rushed. I would feel, nervous about that.
Well, somebody's got to finish last.
Yeah, and I've heard many people say that not finishing last is their biggest goal for a race. But if you look at it logically, finishing even last is better than, like you said, not finishing at all. Someone has to finish last. And I remember one lady who finished last said that it was actually very special. She said people cheered her on and there was a lot of support. It was really a memory that she cherished. And if you think about it, the person who finishes last often has so many more obstacles to overcome than those who finish near the front. Mm-hmm. So really it could be a badge of honor. I know there are some races that kind of give a special prize to the last place finisher. So most people who fear that they'll finish last don't actually do it. It's kind of like one of those, the things that we worry about don't actually happen.
Right.
So, that shouldn't be a barrier to you getting out there.
So it's probably not going to happen. But even if it does, it's not a dishonor to finish last.
Yeah, it's not like everyone boos and hisses and they don't give you a medal. Right. People are going to be genuinely excited for you.
Like they're all looking at their watches waiting to go home, waiting for you to come in. I mean, maybe that could happen somewhere, but we've never heard of it happening.
Yeah, and I'm sure if that did happen, then word would quickly get around and that race would not be very popular anymore.
Okay, and issue number 12, and this is a serious one here, is sparse aid stations.
Yes. Another issue can be aid stations sometimes run out of supplies or are closed towards the back of the pack. And actually, the Tupelo Marathon that you just re-signed up for, we noticed abandoned aid stations after the 20-mile mark, and we were running an average pace. I mean, it wasn't fast marathon for either of us, but we were certainly right in the middle of the pack. And just abandoned, you know, maybe a couple, like, lukewarm cups of water left. It was very dismal. I felt really sorry for the people who were coming behind us.
Yeah, I think that the people that were manning that aid station, they didn't have any shade, and it was already, like, 90 degrees, and they're like, screw this, we're out of here.
I don't know. Because, you know, you think people who are out there on the course longer need the aid stations even more. So this is another one of those issues that you can read reviews about to see how the marathon stocks and staffs their aid stations. Race directors really need to make sure that the aid stations are fully stocked and staffed for the entire time the course is open. If you're unsure if the race is going to have aid stations open, then be sure to carry some fluids and fuel for yourself. And I know some slower marathoners who don't rely on fuel from aid stations, which I think is kind of a good philosophy for anyone. And carrying a small bottle of water, you can fill up at earlier ones just to have handy in case the later aid stations dry up. Actually, one of my coaching clients, who is a solid middle of the packer, just finished a half marathon in Tennessee yesterday, and she said when she got to finish line, they were all out of water.
No way.
She said they had Gatorade left, but no water.
Mm.
So, like, hot, hilly, humid half marathon in Tennessee, and they run out of water. So definitely races need to make sure they plan for these kind of things. Marty says, one of the biggest challenges of back-of-the-pack runners in racing is that too many runners forget that no matter what your speed, there are plenty of runners behind you. My wife has walked many half marathons and reminds me of this every race.
So in other words, when you get to the finish line, don't hog out on post-race finishing food because then there won't be any left for the people coming behind you.
Exactly. I think that's a great point. You know, so if you are, you know, mid-packer and if you finish the race, realize there's always people coming behind you. So don't take food for family and friends. Just take what you're going to need and consume and be polite and respectful of people who are coming behind who are really going to need that stuff.
This happens to us because sometimes we'll do a big marathon, like a rock and roll marathon, and I'll run the half and you'll run the full. So by the time the half marathon finishes, there's all kinds of great food. And then later you and I will talk and I'll be like, hey, did you get some of those brownies? You're like, what brownies?
All there were stale bagels.
Half marathoners wiped it all out.
Yeah. So yeah, there are some races that are really geared more towards half marathoners, sort of like the rock and roll series. And so you kind of get to know that you don't expect a gourmet feast at the finish line if you're a marathoner, even if you're run a fairly decent time. And I can't imagine the people who finish in 6 hours or after what they face, you know, be dismal.
There could be a separate table for the marathoners. This is the marathoners table with all their goodies on it. And then like a staff that stands by it with a fly swatter to swat away hungry half marathoners.
Right. Yeah. And this kind of goes into our next issue is that the finish line gets shut down early.
Yeah. So issue number 13 in our list of issues faced by slower runners is the finish line getting shut down early.
Yeah, often slower runners have fewer spectators along the course because people will leave after the person they came to cheer on has passed. Or I've heard of the race running out of medals. Maybe they didn't plan for enough people. Or sometimes having the food gone at the end, like we were just talking about. Aaron says, I'm a slower runner for longer distances. My marathon PR is 5:30, but most of my times are around the 6-hour mark. At my first marathon, Chicago in 2010, they were taking down the course around me. I also finished last at a half marathon before. I didn't get down on myself about it, but I would like to get faster, and I am, slowly but surely. So I think it is sad when a race doesn't plan for food for all runners, or plan for enough medals, or whatever it is, or when faster runners clean everything out. And there are some races that are going to a bag of food, so each finisher gets just a set bag of food to make sure that everyone gets enough and people aren't just loading up their pockets.
There'll be a pint of ice cream in each bag. You got to get there before it melts.
Yeah, I remember I did the Deseret Classic Marathon in Utah, and they had advertised a special ice cream at the finish line, and lo and behold, it was all gone. The food was pretty sparse at the end of that race, I clearly remember.
I let our kids eat that. I'm sorry.
You weren't even there.
That was for the runners?
I had to drive myself to that one. So, you know, these are some real issues that we've mentioned to think about for slower runners, but there's also many positive things that come with being at the back of the pack. So I don't want to leave this podcast on a negative note, because each of the challenges that we talked about earlier can be overcome, and there are some really amazing things that happen at the back of the pack too.
So now Angie's going to give you four positives when it comes to being a back of the pack runner.
That's right. There's often more encouragement from other slower runners. I think there's a certain camaraderie at the back of the pack. People are often more laid back, they're less competitive, and there's time to talk and enjoy people's company. Deanna says, "One of the biggest positives for me is friendships. I've met a lot of people that I wouldn't have otherwise. I came in next to last at a 10K. A 73-year-old walked it with me. He's never missed running a day in 7 years after his heart attack. Really a tremendous story, and he walked with me. I've seen him at races since then. I think that this is the most gracious sport that allows me to continue to challenge myself with my own rules, and everyone else feels the same. It's not about winning. It's about challenging yourself to be the best that you can be. That's what happens in the middle to the back of the pack."
Well said.
And I'm sure listeners can think of times when they've really struck up conversations or been encouraged by people that are maybe slower. Or even, I like it when there's out and back sections and faster and slower runners can cheer each other on. I think that's really neat to celebrate each other's accomplishments.
And the second positive is fun and costumes. Angie, what does that mean?
Well, when you're not struggling to run as fast as possible or racing, there's much more potential for fun, I think. Joanna says, "I'm totally slow. I average 11:30 minutes per mile during half marathons and finally just ran a 10K under 10 minutes per mile. But I know even that pace is slow to most people. Some folks are naturally fast runners, so some of it is genetics that I'm slow, but not all of it. It's also the work I'm willing or not to put into speed work and hill training to get faster. I can make excuses about work hours, but one of my sisters has 6 kids and works and gets her training done. So if I really was motivated to get faster, I would get it done. It just isn't a huge motivator for me. I mean, my first race was a Disney race, so I'm more concerned about costumes and fun and big medals. Also, I know that I hold myself back. There are good things about being slow. No one cares about time, and everyone in the back of the pack just wants to chat, make new friends, and have fun at races. Going fast is fun, but being carefree is also a great feeling." And Margaret says, "When I'm doing really well, I'm a mid-pack runner and very happy there. The last couple of years, I'm more toward the back of the middle. I will say that I've met some of the most fun people at the back of the pack. I still like lining up at the back if I'm chip tying at the start of a race so I can hang out with the fun people."
Yeah, you just never know what you'll find back there.
Exactly.
People running with boom boxes.
Yeah. So I think instead of getting down on yourself that maybe you're a slower runner, just seek to find ways to enjoy it, to make friends and to encourage other people back there. And I'm sure you'll hear some amazing stories and be inspired and encouraged just to keep doing what you're doing.
And the third positive is that you get your money's worth out of the race.
Yeah, this is a great way to look at being slower. Since you're out there longer, you really get your money's worth, and then you still get the same medal and shirt at the end anyway. Mark says, "As for me, I'm about as slow as they get. The problem is that while I am improving and have basically taken off about 90 minutes from my first marathon, I'm still so slow that most people who have been running for a few days can beat me. One of the cool things about running is that although some of us have much better skill sets than others, we can still relate through the training. A 20-mile run is easy for no one. We can all agree on that. One of the cool things is that when we cross the finish line, all our medals look the same. Another thing that I keep telling myself when I'm running, I am getting my money's worth. I pay the same amount as everyone, but I'm out there for 6 hours or more, and it may feel like days or years, but I'm getting my money's worth in a way that someone that finishes in 3 hours," he says, "yikes, is not."
Yeah, I feel like when I'm not concerned about a time goal, they just sort of kick back and enjoy the scenery more.
Yeah, I think some of my most fun marathons have been ones where I just ran it for fun. For example, like the Marine Corps Marathon last year, I ran it with my sister Autumn, and she's a slower runner than I am, so we just ran it at her pace. And I just enjoyed looking at things and being a sightseer and talking to people, and you know, it was just really a fun experience. there wasn't any pressure on myself.
And the fourth positive that we want to give you is, as a slower runner, there's more chance for improvement.
That's right. If your goal is to get faster, then as a slower runner, there's a bigger margin for improvement. And improvement can come in many different forms, not just measured by your pace. You can have improvement in your pacing strategy, in your fueling, in your mental attitude, maybe in the amount of races that you do. And one of the things I like about being a marathon maniac, and the half fanatic group is the same way for half marathoners, is that by and large, it's more of a laid-back club. Most people are out there doing marathons because they love running and all the benefits that come with it. And there's more pressure to run more races, not necessarily to get faster.
Yeah.
So you can look at improvement in many different ways. It doesn't necessarily just have to be measured by your speed. Kim says, wow, so much to say in so little space. Pros, runners are supportive no matter the pace. Much better chance at seeing improvement and more time to think.
So there you have it, folks. Four positives for being a pack-of-the-pack runner. We hope you enjoyed that. Now it's time for this episode's quick tip. And like Angie said, we're going to give you a list of marathons that have generous cutoff times.
Yes, these ones typically have longer course limits that allow even some walkers enough time to finish. And the first one is the Bataan Memorial Death March, and that takes place in the White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico.
Yeah, I think the Death March thing pretty much describes that.
Well, hey, I felt like some marathons were a death march anyway. So this one goes across sand and kind of the desert in some spots, and they do have an unlimited cutoff time. So
you can bring your sleeping bag.
Well, maybe not that.
That unlimited.
But a majority of people do just walk this one. They have a heavy division where you can wear a pack with a certain amount of weight in it. And so there's a lot of walkers, a lot of marchers out there. So that can be a great one to do for the experience if, you know, you just want to get out there and walk and take it easy or run slowly or whatever floats your boat.
Yeah, this marathon was in March, and there are still some people out there trying to finish it.
Ha, ha, ha. The second one is the Honolulu Marathon in Hawaii. The third one is the Green Bay Marathon in Wisconsin. The fourth one is the Maui Marathon, again in Hawaii. Number five is the Mayor's Midnight Sun Marathon in Alaska. Number six is the Kona Marathon in Hawaii. I think we're seeing a theme here.
Yeah. Hawaii people are so laid back.
Hang loose.
All these ones that you're listing have...
have more generous
like
time
you're talking
limits.
Like 8 hours or something?
I don't know exactly. Like Honolulu, I think, is 8 hours. I think Maui is unlimited.
Wow.
So, you know, you have to check on the website to see exactly what they are. But these are more generous cutoff times.
Cool. So the other races on this list, and by the way, Angie compiled this based on two sources, marathonguide.com and marathonwalking.com. And I'll just read through just really quick some of the races that have a generous cutoff time. New York City Marathon, San Diego Marathon, Disney World Marathon, Catalina Island Marathon in California, the LA Marathon, the Portland Marathon, Dublin Marathon, London has a generous cutoff time, Vancouver Marathon, the Flying Pig in Cincinnati, Ohio, Myrtle Beach Marathon in South Carolina, and the Little Rock Marathon in Little Rock, Arkansas. So just to name a few slower runner-friendly marathons.
That's right. And if you're, you know, wondering about course cutoff times and how stringently they're enforced, feel free to email the race and ask people who are putting it on, you know, what it's like. Just if you're trying to make a decision about, you know, what race to do, make sure that they're going to be able to work with you so that you don't feel that pressure as much.
Yeah, we've heard from people who've done that. And they found that some races have a cutoff time, but, you know, maybe it's a smaller race and they're just glad that you're going to show up and they'll work with you. You know, if you think you're maybe going to be 30 minutes or 40 more minutes, they might, you know, keep some volunteers out there to help you.
Exactly. I know the A2A Marathon in Ardmore, Oklahoma is very good about that. And like we said, some of them offer an early start time too. So don't be afraid to check and ask. Never hurts.
That's right. And to get more training tips and content like this, please visit us at marathontrainacademy.com. When you're there, you can get on our newsletter list and download a free audio gift, one of our funniest and most listened to shows of years gone by, where I describe running my first marathon with Angie's help. And we'd like to say a word of welcome to some new Academy members. Ruth from Ireland, Kabuki from London, Britt from New York, Hillary from Yukon in Canada, Tamara from Michigan, Kristen from California, Sonia from New Mexico, Robin from North Carolina, Julia from New York, Vernon from New York, and Helen from the UK. Still time, folks, to train with us for your fall marathon or half marathon. Head over to our website and you can find out how to train with us using our plans and programs. We are here to help you reach your marathon goals. Thank you for listening to this episode. So glad to be on this journey with you. And as always, we want you to remember, you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Well on my way, well on my way. Yeah.